Welcome everybody to the June 8th, 2021 Platinum call. We are now on the Good Dog Zoom account, which was kind of a big deal for us. I don't know if you were on the last puppy call when things got a little bit crazy. Barbara, she's in stage one. So maybe that was the temp drop. Wasn't very low, but that's very exciting. Oh, poor girl. I hope it goes smoothly. Before we get started, I have a few announcements, then I'll run through Zoom, which I assume everybody knows how to do. So upcoming events, 6/22, June 22nd at 4 p.m., we're going to continue our APET webinars, and this time we're going to talk about the traits that we can assess during the APET that are related to both fear and confidence in our puppies. If you've heard me talk before, you know that I don't think there are any good or bad APET traits or temperament traits in puppies except for fear. So getting a good idea of the kinds of fears that we can see in the APET, and then how we can guide people and what is changeable and what is less changeable, I think is really the crux of our placements in pet homes in particular. So, but we also want to look at the different confidences, the different kinds of confidence puppies can have, confidence in themselves, which is all well and good, but a lot of people don't want puppies that are self-confident. They want puppies that are confident in their owners, people confident. So we'll talk all about that on June 22nd, 4 p.m. Eastern time. You'll get an email about that. And then on June 23rd at 5 p.m., Myra Savant Harris and I are going to sit down and have a conversation about neonate puppies, what they need, what we should be paying attention to, how do we know when they're not doing well, and what steps do we take if they're not doing well. That's a Good Dog webinar, and I will be sure to post that as well so that if you want to join that, you can. That is open to everybody, and it should be a lot of fun. For those of you who don't know Myra, she's published three great books on handling neonate puppies, and really was the beginning of our understanding of the kinds of things we can do with neonate. She's a human neonate care nurse. I don't know much about babies, so that's about as close as I can get to describing what she does, but she brought some of that to the dog world. And we sort of have mixed feelings about, we agree on a lot of things and we don't agree on everything. So it should be a really interesting conversation. I'm very much looking forward to it. If you haven't joined these calls before, the way we work it is first come, first serve. We didn't have any questions sent in ahead of time, so we'll take questions from the audience or discussion points. I have a few that I'd love to discuss if we don't have any comments from anyone or questions from anyone, but we will start with you guys. And we have Barbara whelping her puppies and lots of other things going on. So I'll turn it over to you. And don't be shy, because we will end about 9:30 and I want to make sure you get your questions in. So I'll turn it over to you. Nobody has questions. Wow. Quiet night tonight.
Hey, I'll just share that I took my seven puppies for their eye exams today. And it was an interesting drive on the way over, but everybody has perfect eyes.
Yay. Oh, the heck with the interesting drive. If you have to drive back.
I was so cold on the way over and on the way over, hour and a half drive, they made so much noise. On the way back, they slept the whole drive. So it was good. It was a brand new clinic. It was the only place I could find that would get all seven puppies in, but it was a great experience all around. Really nice vet techs, really nice ophthalmologist. And everybody having perfect eyes was just the icing on the cake.
No kidding. So where did you go, Sandy?
I went to Vienna, Virginia. It was the Hope Advanced Animal Care Center. And when I, you know, called around, my regular ophthalmologist was able to get my last litter in May, but she was already completely for June. And I had a hard time finding any place with openings, and I had a hard time finding a place that would take all seven puppies on the same day. Some of them have, wow, a policy of more than four puppies for eye exams in one day. I know. So I was thrilled. And it was very affordable, which thrilled me too, because one place that said we can see them all, it was they wanted $100 per puppy.
That's closer to what I've paid. It's been crazy with eye doctors.
The ophthalmologist that I use in Ellicott City, the first puppy is around $60, and every other puppy after that's at about $42. This place was a tad more, but definitely more affordable than $100 a puppy. I think it was $70 for the first puppy, and then maybe $48 for each additional puppy. But a really good experience. Great vet techs.
How long did it take with seven puppies?
Oh my goodness. I was so busy. We did have some crate cleanage. I had to stop twice on the way over, two times for poop. And then somebody had thrown up a little chow and they had all eaten it up and slid. I had three different crates in the car. So I was kind of busy cleaning crates in the parking lot.
No worries. No worries.
I want to say, I think we were there for about an hour, maybe hour and a half. And that included them getting the eye drops in the eyes. But what I love about this clinic, they're set up that you can fill out your paperwork online.
The best for eye exams.
So I didn't have to go do all that handwriting. It was all typed in. I printed off copies. I've already got back digital copies from them. So it was very nice just not having to do all that handwriting in those little tiny boxes.
Filling in the little boxes, and used to be filling out the little circles, which was just like a nightmare from your past.
Yep. Press hard because it's in quadruplet or something.
No. Well, that's great. Sorry about the poop and the little bit of puke, but hopefully they'll do better next time.
It's all cleaned up and we're good to go. So anyway, well, I'll jump off so somebody else can jump in here.
Congratulations. Yeah, Erin said that pays $75 per puppy in Central Florida. Barbara has a $35 a pup. Don't even give the name out, Barbara, or you'll have people stealing that person, because I haven't paid $35 a pup in 15 years, I don't think, for eyes. Oh, she did give the name. There you go, Renee. Go for it.
Hi, Gail. So,
who's saying hi?
Kim.
Hi, Kim. Oh, there you are. You're in the middle. You got yourself unmuted.
I did. I have great news. We had an ultrasound. The Border Collie trip to Michigan was successful.
Yay.
Now my question is, there were some things looking back she missed in November with what we thought was perfect timing. Semen shipped in from the same stud dog. And it just, I don't know if it was shipping. I don't know. I mean, the timing, progesterone looked great. Anyway, we drove out to Michigan. We left on the 29th of April. Her progesterone was 0.6. On the 3rd of May, it was 8.5. And on Wednesday, when we did the first side-by-side AI, her progesterone was 20.
Wait. Go back again. So April 29th, it was 0.6.
Yep. May 3rd.
May 3rd. Wow.
It was 8.5. Yep. And May 5th, it was 20. May 5th was 20.
20 is a great number for breeding.
So we did a breeding on Wednesday and Thursday.
Yep. So you probably hit, well, it's hard to imagine that was LH plus 6 and 7, but the numbers sure seem that way.
That's what my confusion was, because then when I looked at it and I said, okay, I'm going to do an ultrasound at what I thought was 30 days on the 2nd of June, we were able to confirm pregnancy, but there were sacs, but they were way small. And she said it's earlier than day 30.
So you did the ultrasound again when? I'm looking at my calendar. So
2nd of June.
That sure seems like 30 days.
It does.
And she was 20 on May 5th. Boy, it's hard to imagine that you aren't 2, 3, 4, that you're not at day 28.
Yep.
If not more.
She said, so I'm curious now as to, should I go back and do another ultrasound? Or
yes. So how many did she get a count? Or
I saw at least 4.
Yay. You can certainly go in this week and ultrasound. You don't want to go a lot past, say, Friday.
Right.
Because if this is day 30 and they're just looking a little small, is this a repro vet that was doing the ultrasound?
No.
Do you have a feeling for experience level?
She's very good.
Okay.
She's very good. And the equipment, it's a brand new office. She just branched out on her own from a different office, and she's fantastic. She's from Serbia. She's certified being a vet over there, came over here, had to go through all the recertifications. And so she's fantastic.
So, I mean, no harm in going in this week if you can get in. And you can continue to ultrasound through pregnancy. Don't do it a million times, but it's okay to ultrasound. You just don't get great counts after day 36, 37, because the uterus begins to, you know, how it wraps on itself.
Well,
So it gets a little harder to count, but with 4, you still may be able to do it just to confirm the count. But you could certainly go in, check heartbeats, get an idea of size and things like that. There's no problem doing that aside from getting an appointment and the expense and the time.
So it changes my target delivery date from, or whelping date, from July 4th to about the 7th.
Oh, gosh, that's hard to imagine, though, with that 20. So it was 2 different labs, the 29th.
Correct.
And the 3rd.
Right, because we had to go to Michigan, and we found a repro vet out in Michigan.
And, who'd you use? Who'd you use?
Dr. Nicole... I want to say Sidari. It was Heritage Animal.
Is she near Flint?
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's Pat Swallows. I don't know if Pat's on. I think that's Pat Swallows repro vet. Gosh, that 20 tells you that she ovulated at least 3 days prior.
Right.
So it's really hard for me to imagine changing your numbers much. You know, maybe the 0.6 was really 1.5. Do you know what lab the 0.6 was from?
That's IDEX.
It was IDEX. Wow.
Yeah. That was IDEX at my vet. And I don't know what it was out at Heritage. I don't know what vet or what system they were using.
Boy.
But yeah, see, and that was just it. When I got the 0.6 on the 29th, that was a Thursday. And then I was like, okay, ideally, you know, getting a progesterone on Saturday or Sunday would have been ideal, but the vet's office isn't in. And so I opted for Monday, and it was 8.5. So somewhere between 0.6 on Thursday, the 29th, and 8.5 on Monday the 3rd was ovulation.
Well, they can ovulate at 8. So I'm staring at the calendar. I apologize for looking over the top of the screen, but I have a calendar up. And so if Thursday was 0.6, Friday was 1.2. So usually you get that doubling at that point as they begin to skyrocket. Okay. LH was maybe Friday night. That would mean ovulation on Sunday, Monday. Ovulation takes place between 4 and 8. So that 8 might have been the tail end of ovulation.
Okay.
And then you would expect the next day it to have gone up at least 3, but it can go up double.
Right. That's where she was.
And 20. Then you have, so I would probably have expected the 20 on Thursday. That's, I think, the thing that makes me wonder, but IDEX is a good lab, so I wouldn't question the Thursday. And obviously you
had success.
You had success. Yeah. Renee, is anybody else have any thoughts on if that slips and the puppies are small?
Yes.
The embryos are small.
Correct.
I wrote in the chat wondering if it was in-house or sent out. I'm seeing more and more and getting more and more understanding of the in-house versus send out, that it checks the progesterone level in a different section of the blood than in-house does, than the out. And I've had some friends who've messaged me, you know, several hours away freaking out because their progesterones are not what they were expecting. And I'm going, it doesn't make sense. Send it out. And they've used confirmatory, and it's rough when you're changing machines. So I think that I would really recommend that she find out from all the places that she had progesterones, what they were testing. And I also asked if she had pictures, because I have become freakishly decent at gestational age at that age. So I can give her my guesstimate also.
Unfortunately,
yep.
I don't have pictures, Renee.
Okay. You can try asking the vet, but she probably would have given them to you if she had taken them, or at least given you one of them. But no harm in asking, just to see. Now, this is the time to gestational age. You don't want to wait. And so you could try and get back in now. It's a little on the latish side, but not terribly. So if you do another ultrasound, ask for some pictures, some good pictures of the fetuses, and put them up, and we'll let Renee take a look at them. Because I can't gestational age worth a darn. I know it's like you're measuring, but that's about all I know.
And I did look up Dr. Nicole Sugai, S-U-G-A-I. She is a poodle breeder. And it was Heritage Animal Hospital. I want to say it was just barely over the border in Michigan, so not far from Flint.
So I would definitely just call and ask what the machine was, just okay, so we have an idea. Because I would hate for you to move your whelping date, and if you shouldn't. You know, you'd like that window to be as close as possible. Now, you may end up with a really wide window and you just can't do anything about it. You know, you have 5 days rather than 3 or something. Right. But if it can be narrowed down, that would be great.
Now, you would be proud of me because I did do vaginal cytology. And the first time I saw parabasal cells was the 9th of May. So that would have been coming back from
29. Yeah. 20 on the 5th and parabasals on the 9th. Yeah. I bet that 20 is high. That 20 is high. That would be my guess. That if you had measured it with IDEX, because to have diestrous on the 9th, you would have had diestrous on the 7th probably.
Yeah, the breeding all shocked me that it was so soon.
Yeah.
And I had the stud owner or co-owner telling me that at 8:05 on Monday, I should drive to Michigan immediately because I'm going to miss it. And I'm like, no, 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 no.
You so were right.
I was arguing with a very seasoned Border Collie breeder because she's like, you've missed it. You've missed it already. And I'm like, no, she hasn't even hit it yet. Because I remember the last time at 14 we missed, and I don't know if that was progesterone timing on her or if it was just the semen quality from freezing or from shipping. You know, the extender, was it temperature? Was it, I don't know. Too many variables.
Right. Yeah, well, you were, I think you were right, because 8.5 is not a moment to panic by any stretch, so. Congratulations. And if you can get more information, post it in the Facebook page.
I will. Thank you.
So is Mary next? Mary, what the heck is with Star and her nomograph?
I didn't see it coming.
No kidding.
I did. You know, usually I see 2580. I don't see not protected. At 1 year of age, she was 90 on her parvo. I got to go get stuff out. And I remember thinking, oh, I hope she's still 90. Tim can't take her to work. And we've measured this. And the dogs that he takes to work, to the woods and around, are ones who run the higher titers.
Wow. Isn't that interesting?
So I just think, you know, they come into something and then they, or their bodies just adjust and they just keep that higher level. So here we are. I mean, and so I'm looking at, you know, when she said we could do the monovalent at 5 weeks, I'm thinking about doing it.
You can, especially because you have so many. So just a summary for those of you who haven't followed Mary's astronomically high parvo titers in her puppies. And her bitches, Star came in at really nice, that's my judgment call, nice, low parvo and distempers so that Mary's puppies are going to be able to respond very early.
That part I love.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they're really, to do a monovalent parvo, it's not as harsh a vaccine as a distemper vaccine.
Right.
You know, that's the one that's hard to do early.
Right. And they really need to be more mature for that.
But if you get the monovalence from Dr. Lori, I think that, you know, you could do 5 or 6 weeks. Kind of depends upon how many of the dogs are going out into the woods, et cetera. But
well, we've already had a conversation via text. Get ready, you know, for lockdown. But like, your boots are staying in your truck, mister.
You will be buck naked on the way in from the truck.
That's right. We live in the middle of nowhere and we're going to take advantage of that. But that really should be no different than it is at any given time, that you know, you're just being careful. The thing that I'm most concerned about is when the puppies start going outside to play, because that's such a wonderful, you know, the ground traction under their feet, et cetera. And so I really think that doing them at 5 weeks is just a smart thing to do, because that's about the time that they're really getting outside a lot. I can hold them back. You know, summers, we get them out at, oh God, 30, and then we bring them back in when it becomes, oh God, hot.
100.
Yeah. Well, we will, little puppies I will bring in by the time it hits 90, and then we allow them to start staying out as they get bigger. And then the next thing that I was wondering about was on the nomograph, she had the 5 weeks, 7 weeks to start the DAP, and then 10 weeks for a final. And I was going to give her a call and talk to her about this. But at the 10 weeks or the 7 weeks, I'm just wondering if maybe she's thinking they're not going to be mature enough. Some of them might not mount a defense against distemper. I don't know why we have the follow-up of the 10 week.
Oh, let me pull it up again.
Does she know that that the vets are going to go, oh, hell no, I'm not going to not give a vaccine. Is that, a part of what plays
in? Oh, yeah.
I don't
that
know.
May I'm well be it. I'm wondering if that is going to be the case.
So that it looks like you're not just saying forget it. I mean, just knowing my experience the last couple of years.
Oh, I've got a new vet that I went into, new to me vet. She's got as much silver as I do, but to do kits titer, and she said, "Oh, I don't believe in titers. Pick me up off of the floor." I just
had.
I'm running into a lot of that out here.
I don't understand how that's even possible for a veterinarian to say, but because they do titers on themselves for rabies.
Hello. I have a vet friend who came back from a trip to Africa, and she needed to have her titer done, and she was like over 50,000 on a rabies titer, and she knows exactly when she got exposed when she was in Africa. But you're right, they do titers on themselves, so yeah. I don't know if it's just someone new to me. I don't know her well enough to know what the deal is.
Yeah, I would guess in looking at the titer, they clearly have a very high probability of responding to the 7 week. Because their numbers are
super titer. Is it
so? Yeah. So I would guess that Tracy's right, that all she's trying to do is give the vets permission and the owners permission to do that 10 week, because then they can titer at 12 weeks.
Right.
And everybody will be happy and everybody will feel professionally, and they will be professionally appropriate. So
I'll give them the option to titer earlier if they want. They can discuss the merits of that with their vet. Yeah. But holy cow, I've had nomograph envy for so long.
You won the lottary. Go Star.
And for the record, Star, who I've leased, who is with us, but she was out of Bliss's first litter with a parvo on the nomograph of 2560. So,
such a perfect example that it is not related to mom. It's not related to the number of vaccines you get. It's just you.
Yeah.
Whatever the dog's characteristic is.
So there we go. I mean, that's the puppies. I will feel really good when the litter goes home and not be sweating. Oh my God, they're going to stop someplace stupid, you know? And yeah, that goes through my mind. I don't tell them that goes through my mind, but it does, because they do. They stop places and it was such a cool place. Here are all these little dogs and, you know, and so in the meantime, I just, you know, I did think what I will do, since I've had so many high ones, I'm probably going to redraw her and retest it 2 weeks after the puppies are born.
Yeah, there's no harm in doing that. Then you can confirm, presumably, you are going to boost her. Are you going to boost her?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I don't think. I used to not do it, but now I just don't think there's any harm in doing it.
Well, she said that I could revaccinate Star when I do the puppies. And
absolutely,
so right. And I'll tell you, I haven't had a chance to Doppler, because it's a big week. My husband's mother has suddenly turned a corner and we are in hospice this week. So we have a lot of family time. Oh, it's, you know what? She's 91 and a half. It's a beautiful time. Good. It really is. It is this is as it should be for all of us to have lived a wonderful life. So I haven't yet Dopplered Star, but I'm going to tell you right now, there's more than 11 puppies in there.
Whoa.
I mean, that's
what Celeste is going to have puppy envy.
Well, I tell you, it is. Dr. Christensen said, he goes, "I'm really good on counts below 10. He goes, "But when there's a lot," he goes, I can see definitely 11, but there might be more. So,
dang it, I'm puppy envy too, because were due about the same time with probably a singleton. God, no.
Oh, not another one, Tracy.
Oh, no. Well, this was the one we had the miss on last year. And the vet said, go to a different stud. And so we did. And so there we have it. And Sandy, I saw your question. Her distemper titer was at 16 and her parvo titer was at 20. And I posted the nomograph in the group. So you can see it and see where her numbers are.
Yeah. So at 7 weeks, those puppies will have pretty much no protection, which sounds scary, but it's really great because they'll be able to respond to those that first vaccine.
Right.
And second one, are you going to get the monovalent from Dr. Lori? Is that?
Yeah, I'm going to call her and talk to her about the best place to get it. And
well, she sells it.
She sells it. Then I will get it directly from her because I'm not going to. I want them to be able to go outside for development. And I just do, you know, we have so many wild critters that come through and, you know, which means, you know, stray dogs could even jump the fence, et cetera. You know, I just.
Oh, and you clearly have dogs with very high titers, which either indicate you have a line with really high titers or you have dogs that are coming in contact with parvo.
Right.
So. I would assume the latter, given some of those numbers you've seen. And
yeah, I think you're right. The same.
Yeah. And Mary, okay. If I were still on our old property where we had the parvo nightmare 8 years ago, in Mary's position, I would do the monovalent.
Yeah, I'm. The more we talk about it, the more. I mean, my head's kind of spinning because this happened at the same time that I posted it. So like 15 minutes ago. I had a chance to look at my email and swapped out, you know, with my sister-in-law for some time. And so I'm just trying to process all of it because I've not ever seen anything like it. So, which.
They're my favorite kind of numbers. But Renee, go ahead. I see your hand up.
Something to keep in mind and maybe help with your vets coming on and being on board with the titering is that Dr. Lori is now published. She also has written the AHA guidelines for shelter medicine for sure and potentially more. I have a new vet to the practice and a squeaky new green vet that I promptly showed them up their first week and I threw it on their desk and said, you're going to read this and you're expected to know it. And that really helped my fight in them going, okay, fine, we can agree with this. So that's more ammunition in our backgrounds to send to the vets that are not sure about it.
Renee, do you have a link for the publish?
I'll find it. Yeah, I'll find it.
Thank you.
Because it's a lot different. They don't realize, and I think the thing that I've learned is the vets don't realize that it's not just covered or not covered. They're not understanding that there's a number and that how much research is behind it. And the $700 million question is, what the heck is a nomograph and how does that help? They just don't, I think a lot of vets don't realize it. I don't think they're getting taught it as in depth as we have in school. So I think they're sort of, that's something that's kind of missed. So when they have it show up, you know, they're thinking that people are doing titers are, you know, tree huggers, nut crunchers kind of people that are like, oh God, they're going to be crazy. So they've kind of
pushed up. It's woo-woo still.
They do think it's a little woo-woo, but once they read and sit down with the information and go, oh, this makes sense, they're more likely to agree with it. And I just keep with my own vets that I work for and puppy owners, I just keep saying, no, we're going to do this. No, we're going to do this. Let's try this. Let's see what we do. And my vet had a genetic, well, we assume a genetic non-responder who actually got parvo from being in the hospital. Interestingly, she has 3 week old puppies and I'm on vacation at the Nationals. And just sent my vet a message and said, oh my God, you have to draw her blood. We have to know what her status is because, we don't know. She serum converted and was protected after contracting parvo. But I'm curious to see.
That's interesting. So
that bitch had 5 rounds of vaccines under Dr. Larson's recommendations. And we were literally, this is why I love Dr. Larson. She sent the email on Sunday morning that said, she's not protected. And so I got the email on my phone and I immediately texted my boss and she said, oh my God, she has diarrhea this morning. Oh my God, she was at my kid's birthday party. There's people who have a litter of puppies. Oh my God. So we tested her on Monday. She was positive. She didn't require hospitalization, but we caught it really early because we knew. And Dr. Larson's actual recommendation was we were going to start with the vaccinating over the lymph nodes was what we were going to do on Tuesday. But when she contracted, we said we don't need to. But she serum converted to be a protective level after contracting parvo, which was crazy.
Well, it shows that the vaccine's a really good vaccine, but it is not identical to that virus. And it's sort of everything we're learning about COVID. I've decided that maybe one of the few positives out of COVID is
absolutely
that dog owners have become so much more sophisticated about viruses and vaccines now. Yeah. And it is easier to talk to people now about protection.
And side effects even.
Yeah, really.
I had a toy breed in that was a little sore and the owner goes, ah, she's just being dramatic. I had my COVID vaccine. My arm hurt for 2 days. She's fine. I'm like, oh, okay. Okay, great. And before the reaction would have been, oh my God, you can never give it to her again. She's going to die. I'm like, no, she's not. We'll just give her some pain meds first.
So that's just been really, a little lousy.
Yeah, that's been really cool to see.
The Quaker that we're raising had his vaccines today and I couldn't go. So my husband took him in and he ended up getting lepto vaccine against my guidance. But anyway, it wasn't anybody's fault, but the puppy's feeling really badly. I mean, he's just sleepy and tired. He's not having anything other than a normal reaction. And we were talking about it and I said to my husband, remember the shingles vaccine? Well, that's how the puppy feels because that's a horrible vaccine. And, you know, he's achy and tired and, you know, he just wants to lie around. He'll be okay, but anyway, I feel bad for him. Yeah. So for those of you who haven't been on calls, Renee's talking about dogs that are genetic non-responders are dogs whose bodies cannot see the vaccine, the portion of the virus in the vaccine. And so they can't develop immunity to it because it doesn't exist in the dog's body's view. And those dogs, there aren't a lot of them. Most of the parvo ones died during the parvo epidemic or soon thereafter. I think the distemper numbers are something like 1 in every 35,000 dogs are distemper non-responders, and I don't remember the parvo number. So those dogs, Dr. Larson's developed all kinds of different ways to try and stimulate their immune system by vaccinating them differently, by switching vaccines, things like that. But some of them simply will never respond to a vaccine. And those dogs have to be protected from parvo, or in the case of this dog that Renee is talking about, they get parvo. And if they survive it, typically their body will see that virus. They can see the whole virus. They can't see the component. And there it is. There's the nomograph form for Dr. Larson. And Dr. Lori Larson at CAVIDS at the University of Wisconsin is just amazing in the support that she provides us and how, I mean, she'll let you know in the middle of the night if your puppy isn't protected or your bitch isn't protected. She's just remarkable in her responsiveness. So support CAVIDS because I don't know how she's doing everything she's been doing, but they really need financial support.
Oh no!
Hi, Crystal. We can hear you. Hi.
I'm trying to show the puppies and playing with Zoom. So pardon me. I don't really know how to use Zoom very well.
Oh, we can see the pups. They look great. How are they doing?
They're having fun. They're getting to a very cute age.
Are they 4?
No, actually, they just turned 3 weeks.
3 weeks, wow. Yeah. They're pretty mobile.
Oh, yes.
Oh, they're looking great. They're looking great. Congratulations.
Yeah. I was just wondering at what age I could trust them with a water bucket, a water pail in here.
So my recommendation is that you introduce water when you introduce food, but that you're, I don't use water buckets. Water buckets scare the heck out of me.
Okay.
I use water holes or something like that. I'd rather they get in the water than fall in the bucket.
Okay. All right. That makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. But if they're still just nursing and they're not eating solid food, unless it's warm, they don't really, hot warm, they don't usually need additional fluids unless you're thinking that they're dehydrated.
Okay. I was thinking about just starting them off with maybe a bowl with formula in it just to lap it up.
Yeah, you can do that. I mean, there's not much need for it for another 3-4 days or 7 days, but you certainly can. Are they not gaining weight?
Most of them are gaining weight. One of them is smaller and not gaining quite as much as I would like. And Poppy's not in here as much as I would like, but they're still gaining, most of them. So
oh my gosh,
I probably could just have her, you guys are so loud. I could probably just have her, you know, nurse that one puppy a little bit more.
Yeah. You can do that. Absolutely. And yeah. I mean, you can certainly start weaning at 3.5 weeks. If, you know, I usually prefer to do it a little bit later if they're gaining, but there's not a lot of downside. The thing I find introducing them at 3 weeks is it's really just a mess and not a lot gets in and they walk in it, they wear it. It's just messy.
Yeah, I prefer usually 4 weeks as well, but
So just monitor their weight.
Yeah. I certainly wouldn't take, you know, Poppy away any more than she wants to be in here, but I always wish she was in here a little bit more. But I think that's just me being a human being that trying to judge what a doggy mom's doing.
I think so too. And I mean, the thing we have to remember is that they're pretty strong at this age and they can empty their mom out really quickly. You know, so what took 6 hours at 2 days takes 3 minutes at this age. You know, it's just in that she's dry and they're done.
Yeah.
Renee's Terriers. We're getting all kinds of puppies tonight.
They started using the litter box a little more tonight, so that is really good. We just moved them in here on Sunday.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Thank you for sharing them. They look terrific.
Thank you.
I want to
go ahead, Gail.
Oh, go ahead, Dawn. So nice to see you.
Thanks.
Go for it.
So I'm pretty sure I have the answer to this question, but I was going to ask it anyway. So I have two bitches of breeding age. One is just turned 4 in November and has only ever had seasons every year, which unbeknownst to me was genetically, you know, her parents and stuff. And I didn't ask that question because I didn't know that would happen, because all of my pups, my bitches, since I started this, have always had 6-7 month seasons. And so I got this puppy, and as I'm walking out the door, I'm told, oh, no, they only come in every year and sometimes every 2 years. I'm like, what? But anyway, that's what she does. So now I have a puppy from the line that every 6 months, every 7 months would be late for them. They all came in like clockwork. And that was the group I was always working with and breeding with. But this puppy has decided she actually came from this other puppy and only comes in every month or every year.
Both of your bitches now?
Yeah,
both are coming in every year.
Genetically, she shouldn't be doing that. Is there anything I can do about that? Or pretty sure there isn't, but
really the only option is to get them around another bitch that's coming in. Although, how old is the one that is delayed that should
just
be coming
two.
In?
Just
so
two.
She may settle down. Yeah, she may settle down as she matures and sort of move back into that inherited cycle.
Right.
But they do tend to cycle together. I would have thought that she would have brought the other one in.
Yeah, no, you know, the other one's stubborn about everything. So. But, yeah.
So The good news is you're less likely to get pios because True. Their uterus is in better shape. The bad news is, boy, you're going to have to time your breedings well or well, have two litters at the same time.
Yeah, and that's what I'm looking at. But, you know, if you miss one, then it's a whole year like I just did. And you guys with all your puppies, puppy envy here. Because, yeah, now you got to wait another year.
I've been there. I had a great bitch that cycled just once a year. I had to figure out her cycle. Once I did, you know, I got four consecutive litters out of her. But until then, it was a little dicey because it is a long wait between those cycles. Boy.
Yeah, exactly.
But you can get a lot of titles done.
Yeah, if anything was going on in the world.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah, we're not doing anything up here in Canada, seriously. So, you know, we're allowed to go into the Walmarts and find clothes now. So, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I hope this summer that turns around.
Yeah, it would be nice, but. Yeah. Anyway, well, if anybody comes up with anything genius or would like to have a 2-year-old for a little while to get her back into her cycle, let me know.
Well, I was going to say, Dawn, you can absolutely use cabergoline for that.
Okay.
So that's certainly an option to bring her in season. I don't know if PG-600 is available in Canada. I'm pretty sure cabergoline is. It's a prescription drug.
Right.
And it's really no side effects. It's a very safe drug. It's, I think, down here for the 2 to 3 weeks you typically need. Now, it can take longer. 2 to 3 weeks is maybe $150 to $200. So that gives you a ballpark. Yours will be more, but I don't know how much more.
Right.
But that's an option, is that you just bring her in.
Right.
And see if that works.
Okay. That's a thought.
Yes. And I just want everybody to know that you can put your girl with other girls in season, because we have bunches of bitches here. And it doesn't necessarily do anything for the ones who are cycling here every 10 to 12 months. We have ones that'll do every 7 months, but it's like, it can be a bit of an old wives' tale. And then sometimes you can have 8 in at one time. So
all of it depends upon the bitch agreeing, and we all know bitches.
Dawn, this is Mo Kylie. I also have 2 sisters who are every 11 months, which is very frustrating. And one of the tricks that one of my vet consultants gave me was, when we have a girl that's in heat, as you get closer to ovulation, we take samples and we freeze them. And then if we're having trouble getting a girl in, we actually have her sniff or lick those samples. And it has seemed to work. One of them didn't ovulate till day 29 this time. And to keep her in heat and make sure she wasn't going into split heat or doing something weird, we also had lots of boys pee all over the front yard of that breeder caretaker's house to keep her going. And she's going to deliver on the 23rd of June. So it worked. Again, it may be one of those things that it's dependent on the girl, but at least with these girls, that seems to have helped if they're going beyond their usual year. Now, I've not tried to bring them in early because
and I have a 5-month-old puppy too that I'm thinking, oh no, don't follow those guys. But but have any of you seen whether or not when you have a girl, an older girl, and the second girl goes the same way as though, have you seen any sign of, you know, the older bitch is more dominant, or so the younger bitch follows other things as well, or is it just more a hormonal thing?
I think it's just a hormonal thing, but I'm sure other people have had different experiences. Your other option, Dawn, is to do a put down money on a cruise that's non-refundable, and then there you go. Exactly. Yeah. They'll come in.
That's a
sure bet.
That's a good thought.
Yeah, it really is just a dicey, you know, a little more weight than we would normally have them carry, being around bitches in season, but it's all just, we're trying. None of them are sure things.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right, thanks.
Well, hopefully your 5-month-old will change everybody up.
That would be nice, yeah. Or at least stick to her own, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Ignore them.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool. I'm going to hit Sandy's comment because I think it's a really important topic, which is heat and humidity with our puppies and our litters and sort of thinking through how much we put them out and how we have to think about it. Puppies, young puppies, and really puppies the whole time we have them before we send them home, are not good at cooling themselves. It is much worse early on. You know, we always worry about keeping puppies warm enough, but there's really a pretty narrow range that puppies can safely be in. And if you have puppies that are overheated, they are miserable. Miserable, and they are desperate to cool themselves. So they're going to be really loud, whining, crying, moving, constantly moving. Even at 5 weeks, they are not very good at cooling themselves. And we have to really watch the heat and humidity. And then they get a little better at 7 weeks, but putting puppies out in the heat without cooling and shade, I think really until we send them home, can be dangerous and hard on the puppies, like really hard on the puppies. I also think it makes them hate the heat. And so if you have sport dogs where you're going to be hunting dove season or warm spots for pheasant season, you do not want to put your puppies out so to the point where they get overheated and they're just lying around panting, because I believe, and I'll let everybody who lives in hotter places chime in, I think it imprints on puppies and they just learn heat avoidance hugely, which is miserable if you're trying to run a hunt test or an agility trial or do an obedience trial in the heat, and the dog isn't that hot, but it in its mind, it is so worried about the heat that it just can't work very well. So I find high 80s and 90s with moderate to high humidity really tough on puppies. Sun is equally problematic. So if you're going to have them out in that kind of heat, they need water, as in pools, you know, baby pools worth of water so they can cool themselves, or the sprays, not just lapping water. And then the frozen ice bottle, you know, soda pop bottles with water that are frozen, anything to let them cool themselves. And I don't know if anybody else has ever tried to start a adventure walk across a sunny spot in the heat. Typically, they will just simply refuse to go because they know they can't cool themselves. So early morning, evening, don't ask them to troop across really hot areas, sunny areas, and trust them, believe them. I am a great believer that dogs really don't lie to us when they're overheating. A lot of times we'll say, hey, it's not that hot. Well, if your dog is telling you it's overheating, it's overheating. Like, just trust it and believe it. And I know, is Mary still on? I can't see. Oh, you are. Mary, I don't mean to ping you, but I know you live in a really hot area. Celeste, you do too. How do you guys manage your pups in the heat?
Air conditioning.
Yep.
Yeah.
Air conditioning.
I put a
litter of puppies out in the shaded area one summer, early morning even, and it was still too hot. And I went away for literally not more than 5 minutes. I came back and they were all laying down with their tongues hanging out to the side. I thought I'd killed them all. And scared me. Oh God. And I said, that's it. Sorry, buyers, but you're just gonna not have dogs outside in the summer.
We take ours out at 5 in the morning or earlier, as soon as, I mean, we just get them out really early so they can have that playtime on a solid surf, or, you know, on the ground. It's just such a nice surface for them to play on. And we just watch the thermometer, and sometimes they're back in the house by 9 o'clock. And then we watch it for it to cool off at night. And for the most part, we will start, you know, it will cool off enough for them to go out for a little bit. But, and then as they get older, I take them out for a night potty, you know, but sometimes it's still 95 degrees when it's dark. Yeah. And so, you know, we'll be having that with this litter of puppies. But we, you know, those are the litters of puppies that just love to go swimming. And
that's true.
We utilize the heat and we just work with it. And we've got a really good inside area set up, and we take them out early. And that means that their puppies are used to getting up at 4:45. They hate us. I don't care. But the people on the East Coast really like it, because then their puppies are getting up at 7:45. But it's just what we do. And the other thing we have to worry about when the heat comes is yellow jackets. Oh, yeah. And then, of course, you know, 3 years ago, we had the puppy bit by the rattlesnake the night before he was going home. And so now I think about that with this litter, because it is, the puppies are due this weekend. So, you know, we're in the middle of snake season. And so I'm going to be taking the puppies out during prime moving time for the rattlesnakes. Yeah. So that means I need to go out earlier, sweep the area, look under everything. And then also at night, because if you remember, that rattlesnake had been holed up under the puppy pen ball pit during the day, and nobody knew it was there until it came out and decided to hunt the puppy. So, you know, he brings with it different things, and we just have to work with it and be sure that we have a really, you treat it like you do the cold. When you live in a cold climate, you make sure that you have a place that's warm enough for your puppies. Well, you have to be sure you have a place that's cool enough, and we have air conditioning, and that's what we do.
Yeah, and I don't think, I think people are much more focused on keeping their puppies warm than cooling their puppies off. I think we tend to think they're young and they're active and they can handle the heat. But from my experience, they really are just about as sensitive. And once they're hot, they're hot. You know, the only thing that's going to cool them off is ice, air conditioning, or swimming, water.
Immersion in water.
Yeah. Cool. Thank you.
Speaking of heat, can I ask a quick question on that? I happened to notice something. I took my puppy to go swimming in a pond, and I noticed that it was warm out. I noticed that the dog's body, when I touched it, it was hotter, wet than it was dry. So I'm kind of thinking,
because of the transfer. The heat was transferring from the body, so it felt hotter to you because more heat was leaving the body as it was being cooled by the wet exterior.
So it was a good thing.
Yes, because it was the way it felt to you, it felt hotter.
Yes,
but it really wasn't. It is just that when a dog goes in and they get wet and then the air starts hitting the water and it's evaporating, it starts cooling the dog, much the same way that sweat would cool us, but dogs don't sweat. And so when you're out there and your hands are in the water, they're cold, you touch the wet fur, it's cold, and it makes the body feel hotter than it was before, but it's really not. The dog's cooling down.
Because I was thinking, this doesn't make sense to me, that it would be hotter in the water.
It's a sensory illusion.
Okay.
It is important that the water is coolish, yes, because I know there are some places in South Carolina where the water is hottish. And so, you know, you've got to make sure that the water is cool. You know, if you think about hose water, which is usually pretty cold, that's great stuff because it's moving. As Mary says, it's pulling the heat out of the body and then the water is leaving. You know, it's leaving the body because it's running off the hose. Chris Sink talks about this. I still think we have the cooling your dog webinar in Avidog. So you can go in and just glance through that. Chris does a nice job talking about how to cool your dog and what are the things that can help and how water can both cool them and not cool them if the water's too warm. I remember a hunt test in Vermont. That water was so hot and we had a dog go down with heat stroke in the water, literally in the water. They had to dive in and save her because the water was just so hot. There was no cooling effect. So, hey, Renee says, anybody within 6 hours drive of Buffalo, New York, want to do an APET on for really cute terriers? So if anybody wants to reach out to Renee, you can ping her now, or you can check with her on Facebook. Renee gets cabergoline for $30, but Dawn's in Canada. That's the only challenge, unless the two of you want to meet at the border, which is an idea. Jean asks, pool swimming for a possibly pregnant bitch whose favorite thing is swimming. Two CCIs on 528, 529. Cervix is safely closed. Highly, yes. Yeah, it's unless you did the TCI before ovulation, her cervix is closed. And yeah, she can swim until the last week. And honestly, I let my guys often swim after last week, but I'm a risk taker. I may be an error. But yeah, and obviously pool is best. So clean water is absolutely best. Everybody's talking about bitches coming in. Jennifer says, yep, bitches coming in. Lots of heat.
Some good vibes and have my bitches come in.
Are they, is everybody due in? Or you just want them in?
I want them in. I have no puppies. I have a miss. I can't even understand how we had a miss.
I don't know how you had that miss either.
Oh, God. Oh, well.
I'm sorry. God,
maybe I complained too much about 8 puppies. Karma.
Who was? I think it was Erin that was on earlier. Said she's got 14 right now. So
oh, you can I am so green. I can't. I'm so green.
Jealous.
I really pick up that poop as I went to the bank.
That is the truth. Kimberly said, I just watched Avidog Cool Your Dog 2 days ago and bought a spray bottle of isopropyl alcohol. Alcohol is great. And you spray it on their belly and their pads. That's a great way to cool dogs when they really need it. Anyone have ideas on 2 litters 20 days apart? You're doing that, Renee? That, really?
That's what happens when the backup bitch comes in season a month early and the bitch that was supposed to be bred laps at cabergoline. So I took the multi best of opposite winning regional specialty bitch and bred her to the number 2 dog in the country. And then I bred the homely little bitch to whatever was in my house at the moment. So I have 2 litters 20 days apart, and oh yeah, the bitches hate each other.
Oh.
I'm like, why did we do this again?
Oh.
And the terriers will be 8 weeks old when the first litter is born. So it'll be
and
great
when are you sending those terriers? 7.5 weeks?
I was keeping them till they were 10, but I think they're going to go home a little sooner, depending on how things are going. But the girls didn't quite organize things. So I'm having my last two litters were 30 days apart. That I think is worse. I don't know. I'm still thinking to myself, why did I do this? I'm thankful that they're both not huge litters. Both bitches have 5 to 7. So
and these are both bloodhounds.
One normal litter. Yep, both bloodhounds, but they will fight when they're together. So they're in separate houses at the moment, and that's how they've been. But we have to pool resources when we have bloodhound litters. So they're gonna have to move in. So we're considering two different floors and passing in the night and signs on the door. But that's gonna be
death
crazy.
Death threats on the door.
Yeah.
And at 20 days apart, so you're gonna have a 9-week old litter and a 6-week old litter. And
I don't think I'm gonna be able to put them together hardly at all.
I don't think so either. Yeah. I don't even think you could do adventure walks. Well, bloodhound adventure walks.
Right. when we had our 30 days, once most of them left, I was able to take the larger litter, the older litter, exercise them. And then when there was only two of them, I could let them in with the other 10, but it was definitely, I had to exercise them first. And I had to get to the part where their mouths were smaller than the heads of the other litter. And that was the scary part, because they would just grab a hold and play. I'm like, no, you're going to kill them. You're going to kill them. That's the hard part. I'm keeping one of the terriers. So I'm like, okay, you're going to have to grow up a singleton, because you can't play with anybody either. Because the bloodhound puppies will hurt that puppy accidentally.
Well, yeah. I mean, at 3 to 4 weeks, you might be able to put the terrier with the bloodhounds. But after you're going to. Yeah. Oh, well, okay.
Welcome to the crazy farm.
No kidding. Oh my gosh. I'm not envying you at all. Jennifer has Bixby's ultrasound on the 17th, fingers and toes crossed on that. If she's pregnant, can we draw the nomograph? You can. So nomographs can be done really anytime. You could do it when you draw brucellosis, you can do it when you draw for progesterone, you can do it at the ultrasound. But like if it was Mary, I don't know when you do a Mary, but if it was Mary where you likely have a high risk of parvo, I would be less likely to do that, because you know, we're trying to get an accurate idea of the amount of antibody in the colostrum. The further away from whelping we go, if there is a chance that they come in contact with parvo, then your nomograph will not be accurate, because the bitch will have a reaction to the parvovirus. You will have no evidence of it because she's protected, but her titer will go off the charts, you know, so it'll go to 2,500, 5,000, 10,000, 20,000. Mary?
I do mine 2 weeks to the day from the first day of my whelping window. And so this time it was like on a Friday that I did it, and I just held the serum in the refrigerator, and then I sent it FedEx overnight on, it was a Tuesday. And they got it the next day. And I just didn't, you know, right now it's hot. I didn't want it to, you know, and I had a cool pack to send it. And so that was, you know, fine. They got it in the middle of the week. But I just do the earliest day and go 2 weeks before. And that way it just works better. You know,
it's the most accurate that you can get. So the 2 weeks before, the 2 weeks after is the most accurate nomograph draw that you can get that we know of right now. Now, I was talking to Dr. Lori last month about funding some research with her to test bitches all the way up to whelping to get an idea of how much the nomograph is changing as they do colostrum, as they create colostrum and they pull those antibodies out of their body. But for what we know, right, or out of their bloodstream, what we know right now, 14, 15 days before, 14, 15 days after whelping is the most accurate nomograph that we can draw. If you do it 28 days before whelping and your bitch does not come in contact with parvovirus, which is really common, you know, it's really common that most bitches are not going to come in contact with the virus in those last 4 weeks of pregnancy, because we usually don't have them out. We usually don't have dogs in, but it really depends upon where you live and the rate of parvo in your immediate area. So Jennifer, I don't know if that's helpful. That's your decision. It certainly isn't unreasonable to do it when you do the ultrasound, but you know, just sort of look at the parvo rate in your area and decide if that makes sense. I would do that. That's pretty much, I think I did 20 days prior for my last litter, because I would guess here I have like a minuscule risk of parvo for our bitches. So think that through as you make the decision. Renee says, I proved major sickness changes titers. Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, so that's the issue with the post whelping titer. Is that the concern, Renee?
Yeah, my bitch that I had a year and a half ago, she had mucometritis, pancreas. She had
I remember that. Yeah.
Actually, I'm at her house right now. She's doing great. She tried to die, and I had titered her before and after. And actually, after, she, according to Dr. Larson, needed parvo vaccine because she did not have enough. And she had been titered like right at the time she was bred. So I actually sent Dr. Larson some blood, which I'm curious if she'll have in with that study, if she does go forward with it. I sent her everything I had, because she was like, if it's dated, I want to know, because she wanted to kind of watch and see when things happen. But that was really kind of scary. And we never really proved whether what those puppies got, because I didn't have the 2 weeks before I had at breeding, and then I had afterwards, and while she was sick, I had titers too. So Dr. Larson was looking at those, but I haven't got those results.
So that, yeah, it's interesting. That would obviously push us. So all of those issues can arise after whelping. Those, they're not common, but they are issues that happen to bitches and can be very dangerous. And obviously, with such a huge assault on the body, the body's going to mount an immune system. So it's already drawn all the antibodies, not all of them, but a lot of the antibodies out of the blood in order to create colostrum. Now the body gets attacked by these various infections and inflammatory responses.
So I'm wondering if that bitch that has the low titer, if potentially she had anything like that too, if she had any major health issues since her last titers, if she was, you know, used to getting titers that are high and then had that low one. I think it was Star, whoever it was.
It was Star. It was Mary Star, but Star only had a 90 at a year. So she wasn't super high. It's Mary's other bitches.
Yeah, it's been, Star's has never had a really high.
Misunderstood.
Yeah. So yeah, she came in at 90. It was at her 1 year post last vaccine checkup. And I decided that's great. I hope she holds that 90. But her mother had the high titer, and that my girls that have had the high titers go down by the Sacramento River a lot. They're out and about, they do a lot of things. And like Tracy Urban, who lives in the same area, takes her dogs on the river trails. So she's always struggling with high titers. And So, and we do have a lot of parvo in the area, but the bitches that have been primarily on my property who haven't been out doing the world tour, so to speak, they've had lower parvo titers. As a matter of fact, Siggy came in at 40 at 1 year old, and I did go ahead and revaccinate her because I figured by the time she bred, she would be lower. And then she had a pretty, you know, she was at 320 when she bred here this year. But we haven't had anybody. Fanny went from 25 to 1200, you know, and so that's just one dilution.
Yeah.
My girls that are higher and out and about, they just seem to stay there. And, but these youngsters that haven't had that exposure aren't super high like that. So, anyhow.
So doesn't she, it didn't bring, nothing brought down that titer except for age. So Brian and Deanna, I don't see your question. You're feeding Farmina puppy. I don't see, are you guys on? Can you unmute? Oh, there we go. Two girls, Farmina puppy, they won't come back in season until November. Should I keep feeding Farmina until then or switch them to something else? I don't want them gaining weight on the puppy. It really doesn't matter. You can leave them on the Farmina puppy if they maintain good weight and they're doing well on it, or you could switch them. The other Farmina ancestral grain products were considered all life stages until the AFCO changed this year. So the formula didn't change. AFCO changed a piece of its standard. So you could switch them to any of the other all lives, any of the other ancestral grain products in Farmina and do fine, or you could switch them to another manufacturer. And then you could, you can put them back on puppy either right before they come in season or when they come in season. So either option. Obviously you don't want them to gain weight, but I don't know about other people. Most of my dogs live on a puppy type product, all life stages product for their entire lives. I mean, through the senior years. So it's not like you have to take them off of it for any reason. It's, they're fine products. But if they're gaining weight or don't seem to be doing well, then definitely change them to something else. So Terry, vet calculates due date at 6/23, LH was 4/18. Let me pull up. I'm waiting for my spreadsheet to open. Okay, so, and Terry, did you get a positive LH test?
Yes, more or less.
What's more or less?
So we pulled it on Friday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and of course on, so the Monday test had a very light positive. So that's why he thinks that it was on, that actually happened Sunday or late Sunday, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and do you have a good ovulation? What was the 420 progesterone?
Let me see. 419 was 120, 1.72, 4 Tuesday, 420. We didn't pull it on Tuesday. Wednesday was 4.27.
So give me those numbers again. So Monday
was
1.72. Tuesday didn't pull. Wednesday.
I pulled LH on Tuesday.
And it was negative.
It was negative. Wednesday, the progesterone was 4.72.
And why does the vet not think Wednesday 4/21 was ovulation. That seems more like it to me.
So that's a good question. So this is what we originally thought. And this, so she, Maggie's history, she had a litter 2 years ago and she missed twice last year. Great numbers, we thought. Good semen, the whole nine yards. And so the vet, actually not the vet, but the, I guess he's like the vet tech, the guy that does all the progesterone. He went back because we were thinking we're going to do a, and he went back and says, I really think that Maggie's ovulating real early and that because she doesn't go very high on her progesterone at all. So he just analyzed because we had the numbers from all the other places that I had gone. And he said, I really just think that she's ovulating early and we want to do this on Friday instead of Saturday or Sunday. And he thought that her, even though we didn't run progesterone on Tuesday, he thinks that she really ovulated on Tuesday. I guess because it's 2 days after the LH.
I don't think it's possible for her to have ovulated on Tuesday because the Wednesday, so ovulation is between 4 and 8, and the within 24 hours they have to go up 3 points, so that 4.72 would be higher. You know, the 4 point, if so let's say she ovulated at 4, then that Wednesday reading should have been 7. I don't know. So, maybe I'm looking at it wrong, but so then, and the 1.72 would be a really reasonable LH. And your LH test on Monday was negative or faint positive?
Monday was the faint positive.
Yeah, I personally would be thinking that Monday was LH.
Okay. So then, and how do I? Does the 6/23 line up with that then?
Yeah, so your whelping window should open on the 21st, the 23rd, sort of the midpoint of that. So sometime between 21 and 25.
Okay, so his numbers are, regardless, I guess, of when actual ovulation was, that due date he gave me, and it's plus or minus 48 hours, right?
Right.
Okay.
And then yeah. So whelping window starts the 21st, but the plus or minus is going to be the 23rd. So 21 to 25. And okay. Yeah, you have to stop the supplemental progesterone.
And that's far enough in advance with the whelping?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Might do it a day before that, but that I would trust your vet on that because it's definitely not my expertise on determining when to withdraw it. So trust your vet on that.
In A to Z, what does it say? What's too early? So if my whelping window starts on the 21st, if she were going into labor before then on the 20th, I'm worried, right?
No, 20th is fine. 20th is fine because, you know, you're usually going to get 24 hours of stage one labor. And so if her temp drop is on the 20th or even late on the 19th, that would be fine because she can have the puppies on the 21st. With no problem. You know, that whelping window is really anywhere in it is okay.
Okay. Okay.
Good luck.
Getting nervous. Thank you.
Nancy says, currently feed raw food. My raw food supplier doesn't have a full analysis of their food. Is there a lab to send to get a full analysis? That is a really good question. I don't have a lab. Anybody have one? Yeah. Mary, go.
I got a list several years ago when I started making homemade food for my old dogs. And I know they're old, but I didn't want to kill them too soon. But the pet food AAFCO.org had a list, and I'm on their site now looking for the list. And I'm sure somewhere I have the list, but I do have the lab, Nancy, that I used. And you could do things as simple as just your basic macronutrients plus minerals. You can get the full breakdown of everything. And so they're really, including all the amino acids and stuff like that, but they have a list and I'm just looking for it. When I find the list, I'll post it in the group. But there are several companies throughout the United States that have it and that will work with people who want to just send in either their recipe or a sample of their food to analyze it.
Nancy, are you on the Facebook group? Hang on. Can you unmute?
Unmute. Okay, there we go. I unmuted.
Hey,
yes, I am on the Facebook group and I've been going back and forth with how I can make this work where I'm at. So I've been doing a lot of research. So I hadn't posted there yet, but since I was on tonight, I thought I would.
Yeah. Perfect. So Mary could put that lab link and then in the Facebook group.
Yeah, I think for the basic stuff, I was running about $130 for a test. And then, you could go upwards of $2,000 for a test, depending on how extensive. But what I would consider doing is putting together the key nutrients that we're really concerned about in pregnancy and in nursing, et cetera. And maybe I'm going out on a limb, but I would presume with raw that you're getting a lot of the other stuff that winds up having to be added into, like my kibble that's cooked out a lot of things.
Right.
But I don't know off the top of my head, I'd have to sit down and brainstorm and look at what those key nutrients would be. Of course, you want to have the proper calcium phosphorus ratio and, and enough carbohydrates, etc. But, beyond that, there are so many different ways that you can order the testing.
Right.
Didn't I email one to you?
No.
Oh, I didn't.
And I wasn't going to bother you today. I know you're busy.
I know. I'm the breeder of Nancy's dog. So apparently this is breeder fail here. Promise to send a lab listing to, a little rock star puppy owner like Nancy, then
I think I was looking at pictures of Nancy's bitch today. Many pictures.
Olive. You guys have heard Olive. Olive often. But I'll post that in the group because I find it to be a really good resource because, as my dogs age, they do so much better off of kibble. And I watched a dog turn around, where I was watching her lay down and breathe and we'd have that long pause and I'm waiting any day. And I just happened to need to change another dog to a homemade diet. And I thought, well, I'll go ahead and put her on it too. And she was 14 and she lived to 16 and a half and was just athletic and happy until the morning she lifted her head and went, and that was it.
I'm done.
Yeah,
I think that would be fabulous, Mary, because I think I've heard you talk about it before, and I've just never pushed it and looked into it. So that would be a really valuable asset for everybody. I'll try and stick it into your litter A to Z as well in the before breeding your bitch. That would be great.
Yeah, and I'll look for it while we're doing family stuff this week.
Yeah. Yeah,
that'd be great. The labs I've contacted, they wanted anywhere from $300 to upwards of $2,000 for testing just one product.
Oh. Yeah, you definitely, the protein and fat ratio, amounts is probably valuable. Above all, calcium phosphorus is going to be really, really
that was important. My main concern. I've got the percentages on the protein and fat, but they just don't offer the rest. So I needed those to feel comfortable. I've got the right supplements going and everything else right now.
And I know I will have to up the carbohydrates.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's easy. You know, that of all of the things we have to do, that is the easy piece.
Right.
Because oatmeal is a wonderful carbohydrate, rice. I mean, you have so many options and all you're trying to do is get carbs in. I won't say carbs, but you know, to a certain extent, that's really it. You don't need to worry much about quality of carbs and things like that. So.
Well, she'll be picking the persimmons and the figs in the fall.
Yeah. So it sounds like she does not mind the carbs, as no. opposed to my girl who looks at you like you're trying to poison her if you put a quarter of a teaspoon of oatmeal in there.
And climbing the tree to pick them herself.
Yeah.
Terrific. Well, we'll keep an eye out and we'll gently nudge Mary if we haven't seen it. Yep, lots of pro raw old dogs. Yeah, I've kept dogs alive in serious kidney failure using raw food in senior years, so it can be really beneficial. Okay, guys, we have reached the end of our time. Let me just do our quick reminder. 22nd of June at 4 p.m., we'll be looking at the puppy traits related to fear and confidence, which is this great little package of traits and so important for all of us. And then on the 23rd at 5 p.m. through Good Dog, I will be talking to Myra Savant Harris on caring for neonatal pups. And I'm really looking forward to that as well. So wonderful to see everybody tonight and great conversation. And we will see you on Facebook. Good luck, Rebecca. Good luck, everybody whose bitches are due soon and those who have puppies. I'm a little jealous too. So good night, guys. Great to see everybody.